Don't you give up, don't you let away. Talking about a forever after.
Greetings, friends.
Don't you give
clients,
up, don't you dare.
Relatives, strangers, anyone who's listening to us tonight. Jack Tuckner and Deborah O'Rell, the Women's Rights in the Workplace attorneys, thrilled to join with you. And it is completely precarious outside, and we don't you give up, don't you dare give in, and don't quit your job, no matter how challenging it is. Remember those two words, don't quit. That's all you have to know. You don't even have to know why now. We'll go into that another time. We are thrilled to have with us today in the studio, in a Women's Rights in the Workplace show, Joy Murphy. Joy is an executive coach and life coach specializing in leadership development and personal growth. Working with compassion, humor, accountability, and courage, Joy challenges her clients to stretch past old habits and belief systems to create a powerful vision for the future and to bring authentic leadership into their lives, relationships, and business. With more than 15 years of experience in brand messaging and communication strategy for the fashion and retail industries, Joy's coaching expertise includes supporting clients in finding their authentic voice, developing a polished personal and professional brand. We all need these days a polished professional and personal brand, and I mean that.
I mean that, too.
Right.
And not only how you present yourself, but online as well.
Unquestionably. In fact, I think we all need, no matter what we do, and that's part of
right.
my new sort of the drumbeat of social media, we can all benefit by sort of making sure that we put out there whatever our passion is, that we are the most outstanding in it and add the most value, because otherwise mm-hmm. go distinguish yourself from everybody else on Twitter and on LinkedIn and so forth. Strengthening communication and presentation skills, acquiring effective management styles. Joy has her acute sensitivity and her own, she walks her own talk with regard to these issues, how to handle and deal with something that is very important and critical to most of us these days, work-life balance, so-called, which really means how do we all deal with the vice-grip-like stressors that we all feel in trying to make a living and pay the bills and take care of our kids and take care of our family and stay in the game and make enough to have the things that society tells us we're supposed to have and also create a space for ourselves so we don't just sort of die and say, was that all there was in this extremely fast-moving train we're all on that we call modern-day life. And I think that's what we all can use. I mean, I don't think there's anybody out there right now, you know, perhaps someone who's already enlightened and sitting on a mountain somewhere and living exact in the moment, but most of us who, like the three of us who are sitting here in the middle of Manhattan and many of our listeners, are dealing with the stress of trying to compromise and basically, quote unquote, have it all, to have what they tell us in the glossy magazines we're supposed to have. So that, and that's the questions we get from clients all the time, and I will just mention, I definitely need to also mention first that next week we have on our show author of, I will tell you in one moment the name of the book, but first let me tell you her name, Marion Schnall, who is the founder of Feminist.com. She is a highly regarded journalist. She's been at the forefront of issues relating to women's leadership for decades. She's interviewed everyone from Maya Angelou to Melinda Gates and most recently President Jimmy Carter and Arianna Huffington. Not too shabby. As part of her ongoing coverage that has been featured in publications ranging from Huffington Post to Time Magazine and O, the Oprah Magazine. Marianne's first book was Daring to Be Ourselves, Influential Women Share Insights on Courage, Happiness, and Finding Your Own Voice, which included a collection of interviews of reputable women leaders and which inspired the format of What Will It Take to Make a Woman President? Conversations about Women, Leadership, and Power, which was built around the question posed by her 8-year-old daughter following the election of President Obama. What will it take to have a woman president? And she sought and interviewed, you know, this whole panoply of females, powerful and otherwise. And the book is terrific, and we're going to be talking with her next Monday night at 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time right here on Women's Rights in the Workplace on PRN.FM. So back to our esteemed guest, Joy Murphy, and our important topic today about work-life balance. You know, Deb and Joy, when we, you know, at our law firm, when we created this firm back in 1992, one of the thoughts was, and this is Women's Rights in the Workplace law firm concentrating on women's issues at work, and we were very clear that it wasn't just going to be, well, we're lawyers and we're going to just, you know, what's your problem? Like, you know, many lawyers look at, like many doctors see their patients is, what is the constellation of symptoms that you have that comprise your problem? And just, oh, we write down, you know, oh, this, well, take two of these and call me in the morning. Or what lawyers do is, can we sue? What kind of money can we make from this? Is there a case? That's what people always say. Is there a case?
Do I have a case?
Do I have a case? Everybody asks that. But you know what? It's just never, it's like saying, do I have a disease? Am I healthy? It's fluid. It's not just that. Yes, you're healthy, but you may not be in a month if you keep doing what you're doing. Or the reverse. Yes, you have a disease. You have a condition, an impairment, but you can resolve it and fix it, live with it, use it, make yourself stronger as a result. People call us and they don't sort of realize, I always sort of hesitate to use the term holism because people always think it's, okay, you're a tree hugger and I don't want you. I want an aggressive lawyer and you're too, you know, granola crunchy feminist. The idea that I think is very much not granola crunchy and tree hugging, although that's a part of it, is we all are complex organisms and a lot of things inform our challenges, like emotional issues, mental issues, relationship issues, financial issues, dreams that we have, you know, past hurts, future challenges. There are all kinds of issues that a professional, whether it's a personal coach or a lawyer or a physician, it's always been my belief, should take into account, take under advisement before giving the diagnosis and the prognosis. You should do this, you should do that. And we try to do that. We've endeavored to have in our firm, but not to talk about our firm as that, but just in any firm that in any practice that I would like to be a part of, even as a patient or client, to know that there is that kind of take me into account and see me as a person. And I know we do that. Deborah does that in our firm, sort of as a listening to people and perhaps even giving advice that's not legal in nature, but might just be human. That's sort of the, you know, touching someone without any conditioning and what am I going to get from it, but just person to person, and things come out of that space sometimes when the person is listening, whether, you know, and what comes out of that sometimes is a wonderful sort of enlightened, brilliant thought that someone who's caught up in their own stuff and identified with their own thoughts and, you know, in the turmoil of their work-life imbalance doesn't see. And so we do try to do that. It's not easy. It's not lucrative, per se. It's not something that, you know, it kind of goes against the grain of most of the stuff in our culture. But look what our culture has basically become. We have a very challenging economy. We have a lot of strife. We have a lot of people that are not, that if you ask them, are you happy? Are you successful? Have you arrived? Are you fulfilled? Are you satisfied? They'll say, absolutely not. I'm definitely not. My job is, I might be happy, I have a great relationship, and my kids are great, but the job is killing me, or the job combined with what I have to do at work is killing me, or I have to take care of now my parents and my kids, and I don't know, people are going crazy. We have, I don't know what the statistics are on Zantac usage and on stress. I was mentioning before that according to Wikipedia's entry for work-life balance, that stress, the number of stress-related disability claims by American employees has doubled recently, according to the Employee Assistance Professionals Association in Arlington, Virginia. 75% to 90% of physician visits are related to stress, and according to the American Institute of Stress, the cost to the industry is estimated at $300 billion a year, etc. We have a lot of us are bugging out, to use the vernacular of the peasantry, where
but look at just our lives. Forget about whether you're happy in your job. The multiple screens that are in front of us. So the pace, the speed, the distractions, the pressures in the last 20 years have, you know, exploded. That's what also adds to the lack of stillness, quiet, thoughtfulness, and the pace, the speed. I need to know it now. Come and get it now. You're not, you know, one is not often given the chance to take a deep breath and say, you know, let me think about that. Because, you know, if I don't take this job right now, I may not get another one. If I don't do this, I may.
So apropos of that, and I want to go back to you in a second, Deborah, but I want our wonderful sound engineer now, Giselle, to cue up. I want everybody to listen to Jim Carrey last week gave a actually a 30-minute address at Maharishi University, a commencement speech, keynote speech. But we have a one-minute version of it, probably you've already heard, it's gone viral, that has to do with making a decision in the moment on what you should do, how you should go about making decisions about your life. And anyway, let Jim Carrey take it away. Please, Giselle.
You can spend your whole life imagining ghosts, worrying about the pathway to the future, but all there will ever be is what's happening here and the decisions we make in this moment, which are based in either love or fear. So many of us choose our path out of fear disguised as practicality. What we really want seems impossibly out of reach and ridiculous to expect, so we never dare to ask the universe for it. I'm saying, I'm the proof that you can ask the universe for it. My father could have been a great comedian, but he didn't believe that that was possible for him. And so he made a conservative choice. Instead, he got a safe job as an accountant. And when I was 12 years old, he was let go from that safe job. And our family had to do whatever we could to survive. I learned many great lessons from my father, not the least of which was that you can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Jake, I could cry listening to that again. Thank you, Giselle. You can fail at what you don't want, as his father did, so you might as well take a chance at being successful at what you love. Fear, as his father did, fear, people make decisions, fear disguised as practicality, but you can ask the universe for what you want. And he would say, I'm a prime example of, you know, someone who got that. And again, just listen, you know, the you could hear from the audience, people, it may not have been like, well, wow, that's, what am I going to do? And sounds good. Well, you're a movie star, but you could tell that it inspires everyone to hear that, because everybody identifies with it on some level, whatever it is. It's just, there is so much fear. Well, my father said to me, well, but what are you going to fall back on? What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's easier for a young person than someone who's in a midlife crisis, but, so that's really the question we're all addressing here. And I'll just say this, and then I'm going to have Joy take it away. What would you say? Deborah Orell said to me not long ago today that she was drowning at work. And she's drowning at work. She's just standing, and not as something, not whining about it, and not saying that I can't do it anymore, but she's drowning, and I don't know. But so, again, wasn't it? Well, we wouldn't come to you and say, I need your help, I'm drowning at work. But the feeling that people have when they're drowning at work, let's start with that, because that seems like a work-life imbalance. What would you say to that? How would you go about starting to deal with what Deborah's challenge is about the drowning part?
Well, first of all, let me say hello, and thank you for having me back.
And thank you for being here.
Thank you for posing such a challenging question right off the bat. Yeah, a lot of us are drowning at work, and I think that the stresses that you mentioned earlier really contribute to that. You know, it's not only our workload, what's happening between 9 to 5, or maybe it's 8 and 7. Some of us are working really long days. Some of us are working 12 or 14 hour days. It's not only what's on our plates at the office, but we're drowning in the responsibilities and stress and noise of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about so many different screens that are in front of us all the time. I'm checking my phone. I'm checking my iPad. I am checking my email. I've got the laptop on my lap and the phone in my hand and the TV going in front of me, so I'm not missing news at any turn. And we are drowning in the noise and the load. So I think it's important to start with an acknowledgement of that. And as I think Deborah mentioned a moment ago, try to get even a couple moments a day to just be quiet. You know, one of the things I can say that really changed my life in a big way a couple of years ago, I used to wake up in the morning. I actually had my TV functioning as my alarm clock. So it would come on each morning around 6:30, and it would just, the TV would come on to the Today Show. And that was how I knew to get up, and I would start getting ready, and it would be on the entire time I was getting ready. And I would catch up on the news and everything and go about my day. And then one day I realized that, you know, hour or so in the morning might be my only time of the entire day to just really have quiet and to center myself and to let my brain ease out of sleep and ease into the bombardment of all of those different signals that are going to come at me all day long. So I stopped. I started waking up to an alarm. I tried to find the most gentle one I could. And my mornings now are quiet. And it has changed my life dramatically. I get onto the subway at a much more peaceful state than when I was, you know, being hit with all of the big media pushes and loud commercials and everything else.
Well,
all
but
day
let me
long.
Ask
so
you
that
about,
helped. That so, helped me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But so you got rid of the noise machine.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the TV, but what do you do about this noise machine here?
Yeah, in our heads.
Yeah, I mean.
So having some quiet time, shutting off the outside noise definitely helps. Definitely
right.
helps.
And not to, I don't mean to get off, but a lot of times people keep that outside noise to distract from the
from what is inside.
Right.
There you go.
And
yeah.
because they don't want to hear what's really going on inside.
Or feel what's really going on.
Exactly.
Right. So it can be a way of self-medicating, actually,
right.
that distraction.
Yeah.
Let me just
okay.
deny what else is going on so that I can just get lost.
What's wrong with that?
Well, we do have to, if we want to move through our challenges, we have to actually be present in them. You know, life throws us things that sometimes there's just no way around it. So you have to find a way to go through it. And if you're mm-hmm. avoiding it, it's not going anywhere. It's just mm-hmm. waiting for you to get up the courage to go through it. But you asked about how to manage the workload is actually where mm-hmm, we started. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely loved Jim Carrey's speech. And I'm so thrilled that you played it. And I was watching it again today in preparation of this. And it's so brilliant. And, you know, the way that he phrased, we make our decisions and we choose our path out of fear disguised as practicality. Isn't that so true?
Yeah,
and isn't that brilliant. What our well-meaning parents and teachers taught us to do?
Right.
You know, I'm thinking about The Graduate, plastics, son,
right.
go into plastics, right?
Right?
The future is plastics. And they were all well-meaning when they wanted us to have something to fall back on, and certainly an education at any level is something to fall back on. But the idea of following our own truth and our own paths and our own passions is so important. And when those of us who are fortunate enough to do that, you know, the load is never too much to bear when we're doing something that we love, that is really using our natural gifts. And, you know, I happen to know that Deborah loves her work. So even though she may have said, I'm drowning today, I imagine you actually said that she wasn't complaining about it. It was more of a, wow, I got a lot on my plate, but there wasn't a dissatisfaction coming from it, is what I'm
accurate.
Hearing.
It's more the fear of, you know, I hope I make all these deadlines or don't let something important fall through the cracks. But
right.
it doesn't feel like work to me.
Right, you know.
So that's an important distinction, whether that is what you just said, whether it's a complaint. You could say it, accept it, surrender to it, even love it, but still make the observation that there's a lot and I'm concerned. It's a different way of saying it, that I'm not able to, that I have too much on my plate, that I won't get to it competently or on time, is a big difference, I guess, whether we're complaining about what we have.
I think it is. I think that, you know, when we are doing work or bringing into our lives any kind of activities that feed our spirits, that use our innate gifts, our special talents, what makes us unique, then there it may take a great deal of effort, it may be a challenge, it may take a lot of time, but at the same time, it is feeding us rather than depleting us. And so that is usually one of the first places I try to start with a client who comes in and says, I'm drowning or I hate my job. Or, you know, we certainly will look at what is going on in the job. And often there are logistical issues that do need to be addressed in terms of workload or a manager and communication styles and all of that. So we'll certainly do that. But one of the places that I like to start with people is going back and looking at what they loved doing as a kid. and helping them to reconnect with what is truly them in their hearts, what is in their passion field, what is in their unique talent and skill base that makes them themselves. So getting back in touch with that is really helpful. You know, as adults, we get so caught up in the busyness of life, in our work and our family and our errands and our bills. And we're so caught up in the constant activity and noise of all that we need to do and manage that we actually forget what brings us joy. And so reconnecting, you know, I will take them through, what was your favorite thing to do in kindergarten or in third grade or in junior high?
Okay, Legos. Now what?
Yeah. So, and did that carry through? So what did you love about Legos? What was important about
that?
Well,
you know what? I think mostly the solitary time of doing something kind of mindless, but creating and building, but alone and contemplative time, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that, okay. So what? Nobody's paying me for it. No one's going to pay me to do Legos. And I was five, Joy. I was five.
Okay. So what else did you love about the Legos? You talked about doing something on your own.
I like the
building.
Colors. I like the satisfaction of the snap together. And they were very solidly made. And I did like building something you could then knock down and start over again. There's something about it that was like, it was the only activity. I never do anything mindless, like puzzles or games on Facebook. But that was something that, and I'm making this up as I go, but it doesn't really matter that I'm saying it. When somebody says to you at 5 years old, I like pick up sticks or, well, I'll finish it. I did actually like Legos, probably for the same reason I liked bowling. And it was mostly, I liked bowling alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked bowling alone for the 2 years I did it, maybe, you know, because it probably was a time I wasn't torturing myself with thoughts because I was distracting myself with the act of bowling, which did feel gratifying, especially if I was getting kind of good at it. And I was alone with nobody, no pressures, no social pressures, no parental pressures, no school pressures. It just felt good. Maybe the time was suspended during that period of time. I'm bowling. It was just, it was fun. But what are you going to do with that?
Well, two things that I noticed that I noticed from your stories is, one, that they are both independent activities, right?
Right. Right.
So you may have been on a bowling team, but really it's your turn up
like
at the lane. Oh, you didn't
sports.
Like the team anyway.
I didn't do anything
so
like that.
Even if you were, it's your turn up at the lane.
Right.
You got to throw that ball and make it a strike or a spare or something else that, you know, you have to. You're on your own with that shot, just as you were on your own with Legos.
Right.
And isn't it interesting that you grew up and here you are running your own business? And you know, you are not part of a big corporate team. You are not reporting to someone else. So it seems to me that you did follow a path that fed things that you that are of value to you, that are part of your core values. And I imagine, and I know that you're successful, and I imagine you are fairly satisfied with your work.
Yes, I am. Is there a correlation? Yes, I mean, that's true. That was really good. Okay, so if I were working, so you might see if I were working in a, because I was someone who didn't participate in team sports, mm-hmm. and I don't really do those team things. So you would have said the problem is you're in a huge company right now, just another cog in the wheel, and maybe that makes you get, you're lost, you're invisible, so you might be better off in a being a little bit of a bigger fish in a smaller pond. Some insight like that, is that what?
Well, first and foremost, my job isn't really to point out what is wrong. My job is to help clients peel back the layers of the noise and chaos that's going on and to get back in touch with what they really want, who they really are, and how we can start helping to create a life mm-hmm. that is representative of that is aligned with their core values, their passions, their gifts, and their goals. So if, you know, the opportunity to work independently came up with a client the way that it has with you, the first place we would start is in how can they bring more independence into their life right now. Maybe they're not able to just quit their job. You know, we do have children to feed and mortgage payments to make and cars to pay for insurance and gas and everything for. So it may not be that were ready to just quit the job. And there are a lot of, there's sort of a bit of a checklist to go through before we quit a job, which
and
we can talk about.
And it may be something that he could bring into his personal
but
life.
But bringing more independence into your life right now, how can we do that?
Okay.
Maybe there is a way to bring more independence into the current job as well.
Okay.
So we'd start looking for possibilities. You know, if you told me that you were a kid who loved to play in the dirt, then, you know, maybe it makes sense for you to plant a garden. It can be as big as, you know, a garden in your backyard. It can be as small as three little pots of an herb garden on your kitchen windowsill. If you were someone who loved animals, then maybe it's time to get a pet. Maybe it's time to volunteer at your local ASPCA, particularly when we have the opportunity to bring in what we love, what feeds our own souls and uses our own gifts at the service and contribution of others, something like the ASPCA, for example, or, you know, if we are teachers and we volunteer to tutor children after school or sign up for a reading program, you know, when we are using our unique gifts and talents in the service of others, then it's quantum leaps in terms of the benefit to ourselves.
Why is that? And the only reason, let me just push back a little bit and play devil's advocate.
Sure.
People, someone listening and saying, come on, I was listening to this because I thought you were going to help me with, I'm all messed up over my job. I'm drinking at night. I have a problem with this. My boss is an asshole. If you only knew, you wouldn't even be sitting here talking if you knew the kind of schmuck I deal with every day. And wait, when you tell me, yes, I love animals, but what's the ASPCA volunteering on Saturdays going to do? What's the transformative value of that? Even if I accept it for a minute and I'm not, you know, sort of all moon unity like you guys are. I'm the type that says, come on, all this, and yeah, Mercury's in retrograde. I don't care. Tell me how you can help me. I should go do more time now for free at the ASPCA. So where's the carryover? What's that part that, let's say, a person who doesn't, who's maybe perhaps not yet open to, you know, less provable, more spiritual or emotionally open, you know, type of dicta like this, what would you say? Why does that help? If I love animals, why does that help free me?
Well, again, I think there are several things that will be happening in parallel. If you were my client, there will be several things that would be happening in parallel.
Okay.
One, we would be navigating through your work day and your job, and where can we make changes there, and how do we start to create a plan to get you out of there? Maybe one of the things that's happening. The idea of revisiting what you love, what excites you, and where you feel most at live and at home in yourself, for example, if it is with animals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anytime we have the opportunity to bring more things that we love into our lives, you know, again, it's less time on the computer. It's less time with the BlackBerry. It's less time with that noise
That's
in our heads worrying about the bills and the stress. And it is something that is feeding our spirits. We feel good when we're holding a puppy, if puppies are what's special and important to us. The other thing that you meant that we were talking about a moment ago is that when our passions are given in service of others,
mm-hmm.
our energies shift and gratitude fills us. You know, we talked about it a bit last week. It's absolutely impossible to be simultaneously be in gratitude and be a victim. Gratitude is
right.
The thing, the single most powerful and immediate thing that lifts us out of that victim mentality. And so when we are in a place of feeding our spirits and in a place of using our gifts and our talents, then we all of a sudden transition out of that negative, stressed victim mentality. And you can see the physical transformation in people. Their heads start to lift, their shoulders start to drop, you know, their brow stops furrowing, and everything starts to settle. And the animals is a brilliant example. You know, it may be working with children. It could be, you know, If sports was really the thing that drove you as a kid, and maybe still is, and you spend all weekend in front of the TV watching that NFL game or baseball or whatever it might be, you know what? Go volunteer and coach a little league game, or start a
Even
team with your
to,
colleagues
yeah.
at work, or yeah, go watch a high school baseball team or football game. Just start revisiting and reminding ourselves of what it is that we really loved when we were pure kids without the stress and responsibility of adulthood, and let's find ways to bring some of those things back into our current situations.
And it's also, that's a really good point, and it's also for the person who's in that, you know, difficult job, the one they hate, the minimum wage, the terrible manager, this is soul-sucking work, this is not, you know, providing anything to me, even within, and we've all had, you know, a shit job like that. Even with that, there is something in that job, in that workspace, even if it's just the check, that one can be grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a crappy place to work, but you know what? I'm grateful for this job. And just the difference between this crappy place I work in, that energy is a downward spiral.
Right.
But I am grateful, and then the other part of the sentence, I am grateful for this check, has an up spiral energy. And the more you can bring that positive, that up energy, it shifts everything. There are studies, research that's been done. If they show people negative images of, you know, horrible things, and then ask them the question, I'm making this up, is the glass half full or half empty? Invariably, if they've just seen pictures of babies, the glass is half full. If they see murder crime scenes, the glass is half empty. That's how the brain works.
Absolutely.
So you don't have to be crunchy granola, spiritual woo-woo. This is just scientific fact. It's how the brain works. So if we know that we can manage our brain, we can begin to make shifts in our life, our
Absolutely.
Lives.
Absolutely.
Hmm. Right?
So it does take a certain amount of effort, because I suppose, pardon me, the person who is, when all of us, I assume, enjoy, you experience the feeling of, because it's got to be, it's not personal, it's like the human condition,
mm-hmm.
right? That whole, as we all do, the natural, the voice in the head, some of our voices are louder than others, some of us, but that voice in the head is pretty much always complaining. And if you're in a job situation that you are saying, what a crappy job, you know, to get to the part where you say, well, to turn that around, well, it's a crappy job, but I still have a paycheck, and I could take care of my kid, and suddenly I'm feeling better, and then in that state of feeling better, I'll make wiser decisions. Like Jim Carrey talks about it, because you're not sort of fear-based in that moment. You might make another decision because you're a little make, maybe because just also by being aligned with the universe, when you're accepting your crappy job, it doesn't mean you don't do anything about it, but you accept
right.
it.
Right.
And if you accept your crappy job internally, accept it for a moment, you're not complaining.
You're not in resistance.
You're not in resistance
right.
anymore. But it takes, but what if, I guess.
And you know, that's the other part of the Jim Carrey story. I don't know if you know, but he wrote, he went to the top of, you know, Beverly Hills or something, the Hollywood sign or something
mm-hmm,
like that.
Yeah.
And he wrote a check, you know, to Jim Carrey for $1 million that he was going to be paid $1 million, or maybe it was 10, for a movie, $10 million for a movie. And he kept that check in his wallet. And lo and behold, Ace Ventura came
okay.
along and he got it.
The question that always brings me back to it, because there are us mere mortals, which I think people would say, is when you talk about someone who is a $40 million, you know, a year movie star, he is, you can't start getting back to notions of The Secret, you know, that's what, because in the
mm-hmm.
book The Secret, that, you know, I personally think that probably it may have caused ultimately more harm than good, because if you have however many 40 languages is in and everyone, and maybe it didn't, but the whole world kind of trying to manifest, and this is maybe a little bit separate and off topic, but not so much, because if I'm trying to manifest the job and I write myself a check for $10 million, you'll have a whole lot of people writing those checks for $10 million, believing. A lot of people read that Secret, and they were like, that's all I do all day long is envision the Rolex watch.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't come. It doesn't come. Jim Carrey is a brilliant talent. He was also freaking lucky. We all know this. Partly.
He worked really hard, and he stayed focused on
mm-hmm.
his vision. He stayed focused on his dream. And anybody who's achieved a dream has had a vision. You had a vision.
Right.
You still have a vision for a particular kind of law practice.
Right.
Defending, advocating for people who need that. And over the however many hundreds of years you've been doing this, it has shifted, but you have always stayed
right.
focused.
That's right.
And so he got lucky, but did he create some of that luck himself?
There's no question he
yes.
did it. That's right.
Okay.
It's all him.
And it's because you're making steps. And again, it comes back to what Joy was saying before. It's in that choice. Is the glass half full or half empty? Anything you can do to keep yourself, rather than being sucked into that vortex of negativity, that you're on the upcycle of it, and you then are attracting more positive things. If you're feeling crappy
true.
Going into an office every day, you're attracting all the same negative, bitching people.
And it worked for you, though, right?
Absolutely. I have my dream job.
But you were in the right frame, because when you could have been really kind of mopey.
Totally.
You weren't.
I wasn't.
You weren't.
And when I was, that's what snapped me out of it. I was in a very awful situation, and I was feeding into it. Look what they're doing to me. Look how they're treating me. Look, you know, right. it was pointing out. And then when I started, you know, the point the finger mm-hmm. out, three are pointing back at you. And when I said, this is unacceptable, I shifted. It doesn't matter if they were to be asked today, did anything happen? No. You know, she was still the same bitch she always was. But for me, it changed. My energy changed. My outlook changed. And I felt a shift in the place I worked. It also made it much easier to begin to say, I really have to get out of here now.
Okay.
But
that shift in what you did, and that
I
shift
did.
Was what Joy's been talking about. I just
yes.
want to make sure to bring it full circle to people who are listening who are struggling with it and say, I don't know why they're even saying anything. Only because, is that... So with the distillation of what you're saying that we're going
well,
back to?
Well, I think that, listen, many of us are stuck in jobs that we don't love. And maybe many of us are stuck in jobs that we hate. And there are real reasons that we have to stay in those jobs.
Right.
We need the paycheck. We need the health insurance. But if you know that your job is, as you said, sucking your soul, right, and depleting us, then somewhere we have to find a way to feed our souls, and to boost us back up a little bit. We can't always be just draining out. So reconnecting with things that you love is a way of feeding our souls.
Okay.
You know, if your favorite class as a kid was art class. You know, when was the last time you just went and splurged $4 on a big box of 64 crayons? Open them, smell them, touch them. The smell of Crayola crayons, I mean, it takes you back
yeah,
to childhood.
What's your favorite color in that box?
My favorite color in that box.
In the 60s. Oh, you don't know?
I don't think I know. You know, they change all the time. There's always new ones.
Oh, they do change, really? Oh.
There's always new colors.
It's like mango now.
But get your hands in the clay, you know, get your paintbrush wet and start creating. And it may start as a hobby, but you may find that you build connections and things start to grow from there. And it does have the potential to lead to new careers, to lead to a new network, to lead to a new invention or product that you can market and sell, or to new people that are also involved in the same and may have a business
okay.
opportunity for you.
Okay. Got it. Okay, but are you supposed to? Is the difference? Here's what I just want to focus in on. George W. Bush is now getting his hands wet and painting himself every day in a sort of Shakespearean, you know, he's painting portraits of himself so he could forget about all the blood on his hands from all the things that he did. And so this is an exercise in distraction. There are people out there that say, you know, my job, whatever, I do what I do, but I do what I love on the weekends, I do what I love at night. I'm in the bowling league, I have my kids and the soccer, I have a million things I love that I do with passion, my knitting, whatever people have, but the job is still, let's say that's the low part on the list. So people do things they love that feed their souls, but that's what they do. They say, I do what I love. That's why I came to see you, because my job sucks, and I'm really struggling with this. Is it just that by reconnecting, if you give someone advice to reconnect, or that maybe if they're feeding their souls in these things, because I don't know, you know, there are all as many nuances of this as there are people, is that that will change the darkness if someone is coming in so bleak and depressed about their life and their job, that feeding their soul with these, because again, I just am thinking, look at all the people that just say, I don't have any money, I'm poor, my husband's not working, he's on disability, we're so scared, but I still love coaching my kids' soccer league. It gives me great pleasure. Mm-hmm. But now let's get back to, I do everything I can. I have no more time to do things that I love. I'm talking about, you know, work. And maybe I'm artificially separating, and I'm just wondering how that, you know, sort of might dovetail into someone who says, it's my executive issues, my work issues that are my biggest drain, and it's 50, 60 hours a week. If I didn't have that, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be talking to you. I'm the happiest woman around. Is there any, I mean, am I just, you know, babbling, or is that something about, because I'm just, there are people who must have that, right, where you just say that I love my husband, I love my wife, I love my kids, I'm very happy with my community and my temple and my church and all those activities, but my job is just horrendous, and it's causing me now, my hair's falling out as a result of it. So saying to them, what do you love? They say, well, I do what I love, but it doesn't pay, and it doesn't pay 60, most of my day is spent commuting or in a job that is killing me. So then that place, it wouldn't be, and you say, well, but what if, you know, do you have time and do you have space? They say, yeah, I have no time because I have four kids, I have three cats. I don't know. All I'm saying is it's not always you can reconnect with what you love and still suffer on the level of work, right? I mean,
well, I probably would challenge. If they really love what they're doing, then they're probably not complaining about it being 60 hours a week and stressing them out.
Well,
so
not
much.
Job. They love what they're doing outside of work.
So outside saying, of work. Okay.
So what I was just saying is when you say, fine, they say, I've got the crayons. I smell them every night. I've got everything going. I mean, really, I love my spouse, and I'm actually quite well-adjusted. It's just, what can you help me with only because this fucking job?
Absolutely.
Joy.
Listen, changing jobs is a big deal, and I absolutely work with people who the right move is to leave the job.
Okay.
You know, despite the economic recovery, only 1 in 3 Americans say that they are happy at work, according to a 2013
okay.
Harris poll. That is really low. One mm-hmm. in three Americans are happy.
So two
well,
thirds
I mean, that's,
are not
it's
happy.
Two-thirds are not happy. 70% of the workforce does not feel connected to their jobs. That's a lot of us. That's, you know, again, it's the two-thirds, pretty much two-thirds. So it may be time to start looking for something else. One of the reasons, again, that we go through these exercises mm-hmm. about reconnecting with what we love is so that we have a direction
right.
for where we want to go next. Because if you hate accounting,
right.
then we're not going to look for another accounting job for you. It's right. not just about you don't like the boss. It's about you don't like the work. So we do need to sort of peel back what is it that is unsatisfying about your job. Is it the boss? Is it the work? Is it the commute? Is it the quality
okay.
of life? Is it the paycheck? You know, there's a lot of factors. So we need to start exploring
right.
what is working and what is not and creating a path towards something that is more fulfilling, more sustainable, more financially rewarding, and more spiritually rewarding,
mm-hmm.
emotionally
right,
rewarding.
Right. Does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, you know, I would completely agree with that because I was in a job for 20 years that I could have been doing, it didn't matter what the function was. I happened to have been in, you know, advertising sales of a sort. And when I think back on it, I fell into it. It was an opportunity. I said yes, and then I kept making more and more money. It wasn't like I ever liked the job,
mm-hmm.
but I kept doing well, and I just kept making more money. But I loved the people I worked with. I loved the recognition. I loved the challenge. I could have been selling cars or, you know, wrenches. It didn't really matter what I sold. It was, that was the environment.
Right.
So we end up in these positions. And this is what I hear often from callers to the office. They're calling and saying, you know, I've been at this company for 6 years. Everything was great. You know, I love my job, you know, for what it is. I'm very happy. Until 2 years ago, I got this new manager, and we just do not connect. And they go through whatever the terrible situation is. Now they're living in fear that mm-hmm. they're going to be fired or lose their job or not get their bonus or, you know, what can I do to stop this? So, you know, we go through the legal part of, you know, whatever the process is. And then just in speaking, it'll sometimes just evolve to, you know, I'm going to guess that the day this new manager started, your inner wisdom said, this isn't going to work out. This isn't right. And I have this conversation several times a week at least with callers. You knew that this wasn't going to work out, mm-hmm. but you kept saying, you know, the caller would say, I can make this work. Maybe it's me. I'm doing something. Let me try this. Let me try that. But the reality was fear kept her in that job doing that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over, hoping to get some different sort of result.
Mm-hmm.
But the fear that she wouldn't get another job, who's going to support my kids, who, you know.
So is that irrational?
Well, it's not irrational because she's got to pay the rent. You have to take care of your kids. I mean, I've been in that spot too. But not paying attention to that inner wisdom, not respecting myself enough, that's what kept me in mm-hmm. that same. So that's like the next step. So if when you first hear that, you know, something tells me this is never going to work out. As irrational as that is, and everybody in my family would say, oh, but you have such a great job. You have to stay there. How do you listen to that voice and not put it off? How do you really respect it, give it weight?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think one of the first things that we all need to understand about ourselves is that we're always in choice.
Right.
And choosing to passively continue is a choice that is probably not going to serve you well. You know, there are internal avenues to explore, whether it is having a meeting with that new boss and trying to work on communication and develop a relationship with them. And we explore different ways to do that. There is the HR route in many corporations, seeing if there's opportunities to either be transferred to another division or work on a different team, if that makes more sense. And then there is stepping into ownership of this is no longer working for me and I have the power to change it. And what does that path begin to look like?
Mm-hmm.
So it may look like going to a few networking events. It may look like reaching out to old clients or old colleagues.
Mm.
It certainly would include working on a resume and getting that up to date. It may include taking a class and adding to your skill set, particularly if there is an area that you don't have a lot of training that you are interested in, or a way of increasing your salary level at the next place that you're interviewing. So there are a lot of different tools and paths to follow, but it begins with that self-responsibility and self-empowered understanding that I have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So in that choice, Joy, what I'm wondering is if someone says to you, you know what, I hear you, but I'm not going to go on Twitter and have 2 million followers and be a million. I'm not Jim Carrey. I don't act, dance, sing. I just want to be happy and keep this job and live out my life simply. And, you know, in terms of whether the promotion that I've always eluded me or how to create the work experience that I deserve, want, or desire here. Is that a different analysis? I mean, do you go through that differently? It's like, I'm here, and I'm not really looking for something big. I mean, I really want to stay. I've been here for 18 years. I hope to not lose this job, but I don't really know how to navigate it.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly, again, I do have to say it. I always invite a client to begin with themselves. If you've been at this job 18 years and it's been easy and manageable and you get in at 9, you leave at 5, that's the way you like it, and now someone new comes along and they expect more.
Okay.
You are still in choice. You have the choice to give more or to seek something else. But that situation that you rode for 18 years may not exist any longer. So you have to choose. If it's, I've always worked 9 to 5 and I'm not working a minute more, then you've made that choice and you might not be getting the promotion. Or we can start to look at, how can I contribute more to the job? How can I show up in a bigger way? How can I increase my value to the company? Where is there a white space or a need that I am uniquely qualified to fill? You know, it could...
Did you say white space?
A white space within the company. A need that you recognize within the company. You know, maybe it is something in sales. Maybe it's expanding a product line. Maybe it's finding a new client base. It depends on the company. There are lots of different ways to go, but what can I bring to this company that is of new value and that makes me a more valuable player for them? And you will see that, hopefully if things go well, the company will start to react with it. And once you show an employer, most of the time, once you show an employer that you are invested in them and that your priority and interest is in making the company flourish, then they will take you seriously and they will help you to add to that success story for the company.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than resisting, you know, this new manager comes along and, you know, completely rocks your world, this nice little boat you've been cruising down on. Everything comes to us for our highest and best good. And we can either stay in resistance of accepting what is. I have this manager. And these women that call and say, you know, she doesn't like me, he doesn't like me, what am I going to do? It's accepting, okay, we're not getting along. What am I supposed to be learning? This is an alarm for me. This is something to pay attention to. Something's going on here, and if I continue to ignore it, it's gonna take a wrong turn somewhere. It's gonna become unsustainable. And again, that's what just made me think of that. It's the choice of either looking at it and recognizing it, or keeping blinders on,
right,
and hoping they don't see you,
right,
and you can stay hidden and keep leaving at 5 o'clock.
But you know, any new manager wants to look good.
Yeah.
So when you approach them about how you can help them to look good,
right,
how you can help to make their job better, make their department more successful, then you become an MVP at that company. So that's certainly one of the places that we explore. What more can we bring?
Right. I think that's vastly overlooked, right? What value I can add to the company instead of what they haven't done for me. Because that's what we hear all the time, right? People saying there's sort of a natural, they failed me, they didn't promote me, when, you know, they didn't promote you because you walk around. You know, it's like the to use a very flawed analogy, but I've been sort of been following the whole meme on, you know, the Twitter sphere now, in the sort of, you know, the yes all women that came about, is that crazy kid who killed himself after killing 6 or 8 people.
Yes,
yeah.
22 years old, cute, right? Attractive, mixed race kid, gets on his last video, and then they showed some clips of him speaking on these men's rights groups, saying, "I'm a virgin. Why? I don't know why." This is what he says in the last video. "I don't know why women don't like me, but they just don't. And no one's ever." And he would drive up and smile at a woman. She didn't go. He never understood. And if this is the flawed analogy, that he never understood that he was blaming women for not like wanting to have sex with him or for him being so lonely. But he never, no one, he never learned. I mean, he was obviously a disturbed puppy, but he never understood, though. But it's, I think this is more prevalent, just it's more nuanced. Not everybody just becomes a homicidal maniac at 22. That he never understood that, like some man said to him on one of these men's sites, said, if you keep talking like this, this is why they don't like you. You're never going to get anybody to talk to you, let alone sleep with you. It's like, what are you bringing to it? Because it was, you know, you don't see that it's just because you don't seem to be able to engage them. Now, he might have needed 40 years of electroconvulsive therapy to get to that point.
Right. It's a little bit difficult to rationalize with an irrational person. And unfortunately, he was certainly an irrational and
but it's all a
young man
who
was facing some challenges. But you're right. We do have to begin with ourselves. And again, stepping outside of that victim mode. Victimhood is a powerless position, and blaming everyone else does not serve us, and it does not change our situation. But stepping into choice, stepping into responsibility, and looking at where can I make a contribution? Where can I shift what I bring to the table? It's
so
mature, it's responsible, and it's proactive. And things change.
And it's powerful. Because is that what you mean by it's proactive in that, in terms of sort of the universe? And again, not to take it to sort of, you know, silver, you know, magic bullet stuff, but that actually when you're proactive, actually when you're not a victim, and actually when you say, take responsibility for it.
You take responsibility.
Even in the biggest companies that I know that you work with,
mm-hmm.
that someone would be very surprised and make a big difference, because if you put yourself, if it's not about what about me, but it's what about them, what about the unit that I serve, whether it's a three-person bodega mom-and-pop shop or Microsoft, it will probably be noticed, because if it's not, you didn't lose anything by putting yourself completely, by giving, you know, all of yourself with your passion. You know, again, it might be if they don't see it, then maybe someone else will. But more often than not, it does make a difference. Is that what you say? If somebody actually, you know, if somebody takes off those, we have 30 seconds. If someone takes off those fear, the fear, back to, again, fear versus love. If someone sees the fear, because we all have that fear, and acknowledges it, but then what would you say? Forge ahead anyway with what your passion is, despite the fear? Is that what you say? You have to see the fear. You just don't cower in its you know, scary face?
I would say get quiet, notice that it's there, and then consider, you know, the opposite of fear is love. So where can you lean into a choice that makes your heart feel full,
right,
and lets your shoulders drop and rise? And your spirit rise, versus a choice that feels cumbersome and constrictive and makes you stressed out. Your body knows the difference, and if you get quiet and you lean into those two choices, you'll know which way to go.
That's outstanding. Thank you, Joy Murphy. Maybe we could just bring you into the office for us and for our clients every week to help give us all pep talks. Where can our listeners find you?
You can find me at www.taketheleadccg.com.
Taketheleadccg.com. Joy Murphy, executive and personal life coach. Thank you for being with us
again with your outstanding insights.
Thank you for having me.
Until next week, when we will have with us again Marianne Schnall, I'm sorry, the journalist who wrote the book, and we'll be here to talk about what will it take to make a woman president next week at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on PRN.FM. Until then, Jack Tuckner and Deborah Orell signing out, saying have a strong and powerful week, and remember, don't quit your job until you speak with an employment lawyer. So soon your chance will come.